Haywire. Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wives. Wife. No one. They shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
We're at a halfway point for the Sustainable Development Goals, which were adopted by the United Nations in 2015 and are predominantly aimed to be met by 2030. Minister for Foreign Affairs Nanaia Mahuta has just returned from the United States, where she addressed the UN General Assembly, outlining Aotearoa's commitment to a variety of global issues and urged other states to do the same. US President Joe Biden also held a two-day Pacific Leaders Summit last week, which the minister attended. The summit strengthened ties between the Pacific and United States, while the United States and China remain intense diplomatic relations. The Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands was noticeably absent from the summit after signing a security pact with Beijing last year. The minister and I had a korero about her address to the UN, as well as the Pacific Leaders Summit and where Aotearoa currently stands in our engagement in global issues. So I'd like to start by speaking about your address to the United Nations General Assembly last month. You began your speech by acknowledging your own ancestor, as well as the Lenape First American people whose land you were on. What is the role you think Aotearoa needs to play in order to honour both our own tangata whenua and Indigenous communities abroad?
Well, I think when we acknowledge within our own country the place of tangata whenua is important, as we travel around the world, we continue to reaffirm the Indigenous people of other countries, and also, you know, if we can lend our experience as a learning pathway to some common challenges, again, by reaffirming tangata whenua in other countries, we open up that door.
In your speech, you also mentioned that collectively we're failing to meet the Sustainable Development Goals. Where does Aotearoa stand in meeting these, and what more must we do?
Well, we can always do more. There's no doubt about that. But one of the things that we've recognised is that wellbeing in itself is a part of helping to achieve against the Sustainable Development Goals. It's how we report their progress. So, for example, under our Labor government, since coming into office, we've put an emphasis on a wellbeing framework, a wellbeing budget. We've identified that there are some critical things that hinge together to improve wellbeing, like, for example, housing, to provide greater security, improved healthcare, improved educational opportunities, improved environmental health. Those all hinge together and are a part of supporting that holistic approach to wellbeing. If I think about what we're doing in the foreign affairs space specifically, and that is more external looking, our climate finance strategy very much aligns to the Sustainable Development Goals, as does our development investment in other countries beyond New Zealand.
Given our history of anti-nuclear movements, how vital is it that New Zealand continues to advocate against nuclear weapons, especially in the context of the Russian-Ukrainian war?
Well, there's a lot of nuclear legacy issues in the Pacific, so it's absolutely critical. It's a defining part of our independent foreign policy as a country, and we are the only country that has a designated portfolio for disarmament and non-proliferation issues. So that signals, one, our commitment to advocating, but two, we recognise in our region this is a significant issue. There's been testing in our waters. We've had our own domestic challenges. And importantly, we can't rely on in any generation that nuclear weapons won't be used, and we have to continually advocate for the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons and actually disarmament as a matter of principle.
You stress the importance of countries adopting a Pacific-minded value and norms when engaging in the Blue Pacific. What do you think Māori and Pacifica values can offer the rest of the world when we engage in regions outside our own?
Well, in the first instance, what we offer the world is saying, this, you know, we know our region, Te Moana Nui Ākiwa. There are many connections that link us, our oceans, our language, our culture, our kin connections, our whakapapa to each other. And as we meet the challenges of this time, and that challenge is climate change, we have to lean towards Pacific culture and understanding of our region as a means of trying to tackle this significant challenge, and there are many others. I think that the world has a lot to learn from us, but the Pacific region is a contested region. So as more and more development partners want to, you know, partner into the Pacific, my message is simple: understand the Pacific sentiment, the Pacific way, values, and priorities, and that is a way of building those lasting partnerships.
And so, speaking on the US Pacific Leaders Summit, which has been held just in the past couple of weeks, could you speak a little bit on the outcomes of that summit and how positive you feel about them?
Oh, well, this is the second summit hosted by President Biden, and it is an attempt to express, for the US to express to the Pacific that they want to be a partner for the region, that they're committing to the region. They're establishing new posts in Tonga and Kiribati. They're resuming the Peace Corps that will be situated in Fiji. USAID will be resituated in Fiji. They're contributing to the preservation and of the tuna fisheries, which is a significant revenue stream for the Pacific. These are all positive signals, and they are warmly received by the Pacific. The other thing is for the Pacific to articulate back to the US what its priorities are. So building regional architecture through the Pacific Island Forum, supporting the priorities that have been outlined in the 2050 Strategy for the Blue Pacific, which is a roadmap that the Pacific have brought together to articulate its priorities. Those are all ways in which a better bridge between the US and Pacific states can be formed.
The summit comes at a time of increasing tension between the United States and China, and the Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands was noticeably missing at the summit after signing a security pact with Beijing last year. Is the potential militarization of the Pacific through states such as China an issue we should be worried about?
Look, we should be very mindful that the US has resumed diplomatic dialogue with China. Now, while not overstating what the outcomes of that resumed dialogue is, I think the world is perceiving it as positive that China and the US are at least talking to each other. We've got to also remember that China has been a long-term partner in the Pacific, but there is space for other partnerships to occur. So the Pacific are assessing effectively what's happening between China and the US, but also assessing what that means in terms of their own bilateral relationships with both of those countries and what it means for the region as a whole.
How do we ensure that the Pacific doesn't become a pawn or stuck in the middle of China and US tensions and diplomatic relations?
Well, this is exactly the nature of the discussions that the US Pacific Leaders Summit. Pacific has said, effectively, we are wanting to ensure that our regional architecture is strengthened and supported, and that's the avenue to engage with the Pacific states, that the existential challenge is climate change, and that the priorities for the region have been clearly articulated in the 2050 Strategy for the Blue Pacific. So those are all key pillars, if you like, that the Pacific have outlined to the US by which it wants to engage with the US.
How hopeful do you feel about diplomatic relations between the US and the Pacific and what this could do for protecting the Pacific from climate change?
Well, we must remain hopeful because the issue of climate change is a global challenge and it requires a collective effort from across the international community. So the Pacific have clearly said we will work with all partners in a responsible way. This is the way to do it. Work through the PIF, through the 2050 Strategy for the Blue Pacific, strengthen bilateral relationships and multilateral opportunities to invest into tackling climate change, and ensure that all the while the peace, stability and prosperity of the region, the Pacific region, is at the forefront of diplomatic dialogue. So we have to be hopeful. If we weren't hopeful, then it's a pretty dire picture.
When a lot of the narratives for us back home are surrounding domestic issues such as the election at this time of year, how important is it that we continue to engage in foreign affairs and what's happening outside our own land.
It's very important because New Zealand as a small country is seen as a strong voice to advocate for the region, but also on issues such as human rights, nuclear disarmament, independent foreign policy that supports multilateralism. Those are all areas that characterise what who New Zealand is and what it means to the international community. That's the very reason why we assessed it was important to continue to have a presence at ministerial level at the United Nations General Assembly, the 78th session. So while the Prime Minister couldn't go, that's the reason why I was up there. Look, I think New Zealanders, by and large, can be very proud of its leadership in some key areas. New Zealand supported, for example, Vanuatu's call for the International Court of Justice to recognise the impact of climate change on states. So we fundamentally believe that we could help by shaping that question and their leadership in that space. While I was up at Unga, we signed the Oceans Treaty, and that's to protect biodiversity in the high seas. And this was a result of some very active work being undertaken by our civil society organisations. And then we're a consistent advocate in terms of human rights, the treatment of women and girls, and the way in which we can advance regional prosperity through responsible trade, and also tackle the issue of climate change. So we're quite early, activators for collective action. And for the Pacific, an example of this is at COP27, we made a small but useful contribution to loss and damage, which is a high priority issue for the Pacific when it comes to the impacts of climate change on small island states. So I think we can be really proud of our country and how we perform on the global stage and express our values and what we believe in.
How important is it that people are voting globally minded this year?
Look, to be absolutely fair, I don't think the foreign affairs or international relations actually is the motivation for why people vote. It's very much more domestic issues. I can say as Minister of Foreign Affairs in my own electorate, the things that will motivate people to vote will be cost of living, housing and the state of our country and in that order. So the issues will be very domestically focused. The challenge for us all is to make sure that every vote, every household registers and every person gets out to vote at this election. There's a lot at stake. And I am concerned about the divisive nature of what some political parties are advocating for at a time when we need greater collective responsibility, greater recognition of cost of living challenges that families are under at the moment, and actually continuing to invest in core public services that we all rely on. And I'm very much a part of a campaign that wants to motivate people to get out to vote to continue the momentum, and that's why we're pushing a two-tick message for the local Labor candidate and the Labor Party.
That was Minister for Foreign Affairs Nanaia Mahuta speaking to me about her time in the United States recently, her address to the United Nations General Assembly, the United States Pacific Leaders Summit, and where Aotearoa currently stands in our engagement with global issues.